Whatever, I said. There's no possible connection.
It's a random universe.
I nodded. So they stay on the back burner. Carbone stays on the front.
Are we going back out to look for the yoga pot?
I shook my head. It's in the guy's car, or in his trash.
Could have been useful.
We'll work with a crowbar instead. It's brand new. It was probably bought just as recently as the yogurt was.
We have no resources.
Now, Detective Clark up in Green Valley will do it for us. He's already looking for his crowbar, presumably. He'll be canvassing hardware stores. We'll ask him to widen his radius and stretch his time frame.
That's a lot of extra work for him.
I nodded. We'll have to offer him something. We'll have to string him along. We'll tell him we're working on something that might help him.
Like what?
I smiled. Oh, we could fake it. We could give him Andrea Norton's name. We could show her exactly what kind of a family we are. I called Detective Clark. I didn't give him Andrea Norton's name. I told him a few lies instead. I told him I recalled the damage to Mrs. Kramer's door and the damage to her head, and that I figured a crowbar was involved, and I told him that, as it happened, we had a rash of break-ins at military installations all up and down the eastern seaboard that also seemed to involve crowbars. And I asked him if we could piggyback on the legwork he was undoubtedly already doing in terms of tracing the Green Valley weapon. He paused at that point, and I filled the silence by telling him that military quartermasters currently had no crowbars on general issue, and therefore I was convinced our bad guys had used a civilian source of supply. I gave him some guff about not wanting to duplicate his efforts because we had a more promising line of inquiry to spend our time on. He paused again at that point, like cops everywhere, waiting to hear the proffered quid pro quo. I told him that as soon as we had a name or a profile or a description, he would have it too, just as fast as stuff can travel down a fax line. He perked up then. He was a desperate man, staring at a brick wall. He asked what exactly I wanted. I told him that it would be helpful to us if he could expand his canvas to a 300-mile radius around Green Valley and check hardware store purchases during a window that started late on New Year's Eve and extended through, say, January 4th. "What's your promising line of inquiry?" he asked. "There might be a military connection with Mrs. Kramer. We might be able to give you the guy on a plate, all tied up with a bow."
"I'd really like that."
"Cooperation," I said, "makes the world go round."
"Sure does," he said.
He sounded happy. He bought the whole bill of goods. He promised to expand his search and copy me in. I hung up the phone, and it rang again immediately. I picked it up and heard a woman's voice. It sounded warm and intimate and southern. It asked me to 1033 at 1016 from the MPXO at Fort Jackson, which meant,
"Please stand by to take a secure landline call from your opposite number in South Carolina."
I waited with the phone by my ear and heard empty electronic hiss for a moment. Then there was a loud click, and my oppo in South Carolina came on and told me I should know that Colonel David C. Brubaker, Fort Byrd Special Forces CO, had been found that morning with two bullets in his head in an alley in a crummy district of Columbia, which was South Carolina's capital city, and which was all of 200 miles from the North Carolina Golf Course Hotel where he'd been spending his holiday furlough with his wife. And according to the local paramedics, he'd been dead for a day or two. My oppo at Jackson was a guy called Sanchez. I knew him fairly well, and I liked him better. He was smart, and he was good. I put the call on the speaker to include Summer, and we talked briefly about jurisdiction, but without much enthusiasm. Jurisdiction was always a gray area, and we all knew we were beaten from the get-go. Brubaker had been on vacation. He'd been in civilian clothes. He'd been in a city alley, and therefore the Columbia PD was claiming him. There was nothing we could do about it, and the Columbia PD had notified the FBI, because Brubaker's last known whereabouts were the North Carolina Golf Hotel, which added a possible interstate dimension to the situation, and interstate homicide was the Bureau's bag. And also, because an Army officer is technically a federal employee, and killing federal employees is a separate offense, which would give them another charge to throw at the perp if by any miracle they ever found him. Neither Sanchez nor I nor Summer cared a whole hell of a lot about the difference between state courts and federal courts, but we all knew if the FBI was involved, the case was well beyond our grasp. We agreed the very best we could hope for was that we might eventually see some of the relevant documentation, strictly for informational purposes only, and strictly as a courtesy. Summer made a face and turned away. I took the phone off the speaker and picked it up and spoke to Sanchez one-on-one again. "Got a feeling?" I asked him.
"Someone he knew," Sanchez said. "Not easy to surprise a Delta soldier as good as Brubaker was, in an alley."
"Weapon?"
"Paramedics figured it for a 9mm handgun, and they should know. They see plenty of GSWs. Apparently they do a lot of cleaning up every Friday and Saturday night in that part of town."
"Why was he there?"
"No idea. Rendezvous, presumably, with someone he knew."
"Got a feeling about when?"
"The body's stone cold, the skin is a little green, and rigor is all gone. They're saying 24 or 48 hours. Safe bet would be to split the difference. Let's call it the middle of the night before last. Maybe 3 or 4 a.m. City garbage truck found him at 10 this morning. Weekly trash collection."
"Where were you on December 28th?
"Korea. You?"
"Panama."
"Why did they move us?"
"I keep thinking we're about to find out," I said.
"Something weird is going on," Sanchez said. "I checked, because I was curious, and there are more than 20 of us in the same boat worldwide, and Garber's signature is on all the orders, but I don't think it's legit."
"I'm certain it isn't legit," I said. "Anything happening down there before this Brubaker situation?"
"Not a thing. Quietest week I ever spent."
We hung up. I sat still for a long moment. Seemed to me that Columbia in South Carolina was about 200 miles from Fort Byrd. Drive southwest on the highway, cross the state line, find I-20 heading west, drive some more, and you were there. About 200 miles. The night before last was the night we found Carbone's body. I'd left Andrea Norton's office just before 2 o'clock in the morning. She could alibi me up until that point. Then I'd been in the mortuary at 7 o'clock for the post-mortem. The pathologist could confirm that. So I had two unconnected alibi bookends. But 0200 until 0700 still gave me a possible 5-hour window, with Brubaker's likely time of death right there in the middle of it. Could I have driven 200 miles there and 200 miles back in 5 hours?
"What?"
Summer said. "The Delta guys have already got me in the frame for Carbone. Now I'm wondering whether they're going to be coming at me for Brubaker, too. How does 400 miles in 5 hours sound to you?"
"I could probably do it," she said. "Average of 80 miles an hour all the way. Depends on what car I was using, of course, and road construction and traffic and weather and cops. It's definitely possible."
"Terrific."
"But it's marginal."
"It better be marginal. Killing Brubaker will be like killing God to them."
"You going over there to break the news?"
I nodded. "I think I have to. It's a question of respect. But you inform the post commander for me, okay?" The Special Forces adjutant was an asshole, but he was human, too. He got very still and went very pale when I told him about Brubaker, and there was clearly more to it than an anticipation of mere bureaucratic hassle. From what I'd heard, Brubaker was stern and distant and authoritarian, but he was a real father figure, to his men individually and to his unit as a whole, and to his unit as a concept. Special Forces generally, and Delta in particular, hadn't always been popular inside the Pentagon and on Capitol Hill. The Army hates change, and it takes a long time to get used to things. The idea of a ragtag bunch of hunter-killers had been a hard sell at the outset, and Brubaker had been one of the guys doing the selling, and he'd never let up since. His death was going to hit Special Forces the way the death of a president would hit the nation as a whole.
Carbone was bad enough, the adjutant said, but this is unbelievable. Their connection?
I looked at him. Why would there be a connection, I said. Carbone was a training accident. He said nothing. Why was Brubaker at a hotel?
Because he likes to play golf. He's got a house near Bragg from way back, but he doesn't like the golf there.
Where was the hotel?
Outside of Raleigh. Did he go there a lot? Every chance he got.
Does his wife play golf?
The adjutant nodded. They play together.
Then he paused.
Played, he said.
And then he went quiet and looked away from me. I pictured Brubaker in my mind. I'd never met him, but I knew guys just like him. One day they're talking about how to angle a Claymore mine so the little ball bearings explode outward at exactly the right angle to rip the enemy's spines out of their backs with maximum efficiency. Next day, they're wearing pastel shirts with small crocodiles on the breast, playing golf with their wives, maybe holding hands and smiling as they ride together along the fairways in their little electric carts. I knew plenty of guys like that. My own father had been one. Not that he'd ever played golf. He watched birds. He'd been in most countries in the world and had seen a lot of birds. I stood up.
Call me if you need me, I said. You know, if there's anything I can do.
The adjutant nodded.
Thanks for the visit, he said. Better than a phone call.
I went back to my office. Summer wasn't there. I wasted more than an hour with her personnel lists. I made a shortcut decision and took the pathologist out of the mix. I took Summer out. I took Andrea Norton out. Then I took all the women out. The medical evidence was pretty clear about the attacker's height and strength. I took the O Club dining room staff out. Their NCO had said they were all hard at work, fussing over their guests. I took the cooks out and the bar staff and the MP gate guards. I took out anyone listed as hospitalized and non-ambulatory. I took myself out. I took Carbone out because it wasn't suicide. Then I counted the remaining check marks and wrote the number 973 on a slip of paper. That was our suspect pool. I stared into space. My phone rang. I picked it up. It was Sanchez again, down at Fort Jackson.
Columbia PD just called me, he said. They're sharing their initial findings.
And?
Their medical examiner doesn't entirely agree with me. Time of death wasn't 3 or 4 in the morning. It was 1:23 a.m. the night before last.
That's very precise.
Bullet caught his wristwatch.
A broken watch?
Can't necessarily rely on that.
No, it's firm enough. They did a lot of other tests.
Wrong season for measurable insect activity, which would have helped, but the stomach contents were exactly right for 5 or 6 hours after he ate a heavy dinner.
What does his wife say?
He disappeared at 8 that night. After a heavy dinner, got up from the table and never came back.
What'd she do about it?
Nothing, Sanchez said. He was Special Forces. Their whole marriage, he'll have been disappearing with no warning. The middle of dinner, the middle of the night, days or weeks at a time, never able to say why or where afterwards. She was used to it.
Did he get a phone call or something?
She assumes he did at some point. She's not really sure. She was in the spa before dinner. They just played 27 holes.
Can you call her yourself? She'll talk to you faster than civilian cops.
I could try, I suppose.
Anything else? I said.
The GSWs were 9mm, he said. 2 rounds fired, both of them through and through, knee entry wounds, bad exit wounds.
Full metal jackets, I said.
Contact shots, he said. There were powder burns and soot.
I paused. I couldn't picture it. 2 rounds fired? Contact shots? So one of the bullets goes in, comes out, loops all the way around, comes back, and drops down and smashes his wristwatch?
What, did he have his hands on his head?
He was shot from behind, Reacher. A double tap to the back of the skull. Bang, bang, thank you, and good night. The second round must have gone through his head and caught his watch. Downward trajectory. Tall shooter.
I said nothing.
Right, Sanchez said. How likely is all that?
Did you know him?
Never met him, I said. He was way above average. He was a real pro, and he was a thinker. Any angle, any advantage, any wrinkle, he knew it, and he was ready to use it.
But he got himself shot in the back of the head.
He knew the guy. Definitely. Had to. Why else would he turn his back in the middle of the night in an alley?